the April 19th, 2023 Planning Commission meeting. Okay, so we were talking about the easement, and Jeff, during the break, and I don't know if you can confirm this, Ms. Rachel, but it appears that there's parallel easements in my map. If they're, I'm on page 53 of our board packet.
Do you have an exhibit number? Because I don't have it numbered like you do.
Map for exhibit A. And there's an 80.
It's part of exhibit C.
Yeah.
Okay. Page 53 of my packet. That's all I know.
Yeah, I don't know the page number.
It is right before a parcel map that starts off of Schilling Way. Yeah, and it says Exhibit C, Tamsin Way easement on the very bottom, and Exhibit A on the top of the map. And it's just a cutout of the easements. And from what I see...
It's right before Exhibit D. Exhibit D is that parcel map.
But what I'm seeing, and I don't know if I'm understanding this right, but the easement in question, so there's an 80-foot one to the south, and then north of that is a 60-foot one. So the question is, does one supersede the other? Or what is the question?
Well, that's my question, because the preceding recordation above Exhibit A is all dealing with the 2008 recordation. And that's why I'm wondering, why do we have this 1951 recordation in here if it already existed?
Okay, I can answer that. So what it is actually referring to in Exhibit A, and I'm going to read it for the audience so that they understand what we're looking at. It says, beginning at the northwest corner of that certain parcel of land described in grant deed from Ferguson to Porteous, recorded June 29, 1951, in the Office of Siskiyou County Records in Book 280 of Official Records, page 189, thence along the northern boundary of said parcel, east a distance of 275.37 feet to the northeast corner of said parcel and the terminus of this strip description. So what they are doing is they are referring back to a grant deed that granted property in 1951 to describe the start of where the easement is. That's all that that 1951 grant deed is doing. It's telling you, hey, in this recorded document on this date, this is the start of what we're talking about now. So it's just using it as a reference for where to start your measurement. It's pretty common when we see stuff like this. We're just lucky it doesn't say the tree, because that's quite often what we have is the tree at the, you know, Smith property.
So the easement is 60. Easement is 80.
It's not shown here.
Easement, the 60 foot wide, is to serve not Tanner, but the new owner, Deese. Is that correct?
So, right now, that 60 foot wide easement is serving parcel A, which is the subject parcel that was created back in 2008, and also parcel B, which is just south of it.
Right, which is no longer Tanner.
No, Tanner sold that, and somebody else has built the house.
Yeah. Okay, so. Going back to our discussion, so you've now clarified the 60. Is there still an existing 80-foot easement right next to it? Because that's what says to be replaced by the 60. So is there an existing notice on a deed of an 80-foot easement as well?
So if there was an old deed, it might still have reference to it if it hasn't been updated, but that 60-foot wide easement replaced the 80-foot wide. So if there may be a reference to it, but it's not a valid easement at this point because it got replaced by this recorded document.
Yes and no.
No.
That I would strongly disagree with you. Unless it has been revoked, that 80-foot still exists.
So I would have to defer to county council regarding this.
And that's why I'm asking the question, because I see how the 60 has been noted, okay, 2008, referencing previous maps. But if this is saying there's an 80-foot, you can't simply, with a couple words, say, oh, we're going to replace it. If it's not revoked, it still exists.
No, the deed would reflect that. And if the deed doesn't reflect the 80-foot, there is no 80-foot.
I would strongly dispute that, because we go through that with irrigation ditches going through parcels where it has not been noted on a map, and the easement still exists until it is revoked.
Commissioner Hart?
No, I have to agree. I've already been through one of these big deals.
And I've been through three of them.
$350,000.
Can you use your microphone, please?
Yeah,
Yes, I agree with Mr. Powell. I want to see, if nobody's done a title search to find out whether or not that 80-foot easement has been extinguished, to me, it's still there.
Yep.
There's got to be a formal action to get rid of that, and it's got to be reflected in the title search.
Yep.
Through the chair?
Yes.
The property owner of that particular parcel with both of those easements would like to speak on this subject, if you would like to call him up.
If sure. You guys have questions,
can you add clarification to this?
Yep, we can do that then.
Okay, so the...
Can you say your name again for the record? Thank
Wes
you.
Wes Solis, 1312 Cedar Drive. The easement was extinguished. The 80-foot easement was extinguished and replaced by the 60-foot easement.
Okay, so it was properly extinguished?
Yes.
In the past?
Yes.
Thank you. That was the answer.
Prior to my house being built on the property.
Okay, because with that 80 and the 60, there's not a whole lot of area to build.
Yes.
With the way those are laid out, and that's why I was asking the question.
The 80-foot easement was originally put in by Mr. Tanner in his attempt to put a retirement home on the back 5-acre contiguous parcel, which was rejected because it was in a residential area.
Okay. Thank
and
you.
And that's when he...
Wait.
Parceled that. Yes.
So you said it was properly extinguished. So that's all recorded in the deed?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
All right, so that takes care of my easement question.
Okay.
Ms. Rachel.
Yes.
As far as notices to the neighbors, when were those notices sent?
Janine can clarify, but I believe they were sent 17 days prior to this meeting. No?
They were sent April 5th. Or April. I'm sorry, you're right. I apologize. April 3rd.
April
they were
3rd.
Mailed on April 3rd to the 30-foot adjacent parcel.
Okay.
30 or 300?
I had 300-foot parcel number.
Okay.
Parcel owners.
I had people contacting me exactly 2 weeks ago regarding this who had received their notice.
Okay. So in that notice, did it include the, hold on, here we go, the site map exhibit E?
No.
It did not?
It did not include a site map. Government code requires a general description of the location, and we gave a verbal description.
Okay, I get it. Was Exhibit E available online at the date when the notice was sent out?
The staff report, which included the exhibits, was not finalized until this past Friday. So that is the date that it gets posted online is when it's finalized.
So posted the,
The same day you get
14th?
The same day you get them emailed to you. They go on our website.
Okay. That's what I was, when we get the notice, when we get the staff packet, that's when it goes live.
Correct.
Okay, so the information we have is available to the public at exactly the same time.
Correct, and that's indicated in the public hearing notice with the link to that web page for the meeting.
Through the chair, and just to add further clarification, Healy Lane Planning Director, and that is also consistent with our Brown Act requirements of when we are allowed to post staff reports prior to any public body meeting.
Okay. So for further clarification, because I don't go online to get it because Janine is so nice to email it to me on the date, was the site plan Exhibit E online the same day I received it, that shows the leach field and the parking spaces, etc.
Yes, the entire packet got posted this past Friday.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Was it published in the paper?
And I have the public hearing notice, and I can show it on the screen if you would like to see it.
Was it published in the paper as well?
Yes.
The hearing notice was, but not the staff reports. Just the hearing notice. Yeah. The same thing that is mailed to the 300-foot parcel.
Okay. Next question. Clarification. In our exhibits, let me scroll back here. Okay, so this is saying it's Exhibit B. Let me make sure. Okay, yes, this is all Exhibit B. In Exhibit B, it has the breakdown of the square footage, etc. And so for the A3 assembly, it states 47 occupants for the assembly area. For the lounge space, it says 36 occupants. Thus, that's where we come up with the potential 83 total. I did not see in the conditions where there was a maximum occupancy at any given time. It looks to me like the parking, it's saying 12 spaces for the A3, which would be 12 for 47, 9 spaces for the lounge area, which gives 21, are the required accessible parking spaces by California law in addition to those 21, or can they be part of the 21? In other words, we've said there need to be 21 parking spaces. For ADA compliance, should it actually be 23, or can two of the existing 21 comply with ADA?
So I would ask that one of our building inspectors who's present speak to this, because he was the one that calculated how many ADA spaces. That is something that when a building permit is submitted, the building department reviews the number of ADA spaces and determines if it's adequate. So I don't know the answer to that one off the top of my head.
Okay.
Would you like for him to?
Yes, please, because I just want to make sure we've got required spaces using the guidance of 4 people per vehicle, which gives us the 21.
Correct.
Then we have the note on here, is it two additional, or two of those 21 must be ADA?
So again, my name is Philip Oates, 245 Arnos Drive, Talent, Oregon. The total number would be the total number required to include the accessible parking spaces.
So are you speaking as the county official, or are you speaking as the designer?
As the designer.
Not the county official?
No. Right.
So can you say that one more time?
So the amount of parking includes the handicap parking, the total number as required. So
it doesn't need,
it does not need to be the required parking plus the handicap parking.
Okay. So you have a total required parking needed.
Yes.
And then based upon that number, a percentage of that, in this case, it's going to be 2 of those must be ADA compliant.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. I wanted to be clear on that, that it was an addition. Okay. Thank you.
Through the chair.
Yes, Ms.
I want to clarify that condition of approval number 2 states that the maximum occupancy shall not exceed 47 persons or the design capacity of the septic system, whichever is less. Just to be clear.
What page are you on?
I am on Exhibit A1, page 1 of 3. It's condition of approval number 2.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so I'm jumping up to there because that's where my next question is. So this condition for maximum occupancy is for the building?
It's total for this project, so it would include any outside uses as well.
So we're being liberal in the definition of occupancy, including outside space, not just inside, because typically when we have a condition of occupancy, it is number of live beings inside four walls and under a roof.
We can modify this language to make it more clear.
I think that should be clarified. Yes, please.
Do you have a preference on what language you'd like to see?
Keep it simple. Maximum occupancy of the property shall not exceed. That would include outside and inside.
Did you want to add the language outside and inside, or just to say the maximum
occupancy
of
the property?
Okay.
That would include building and outside space.
Okay.
Now my next question goes to Mr. Dean or Ms. Lang. Interesting language on condition number 13. We just heard in public comment that the well has been drilled, that the well has been used, that the well is in use. Yet condition 13 says a well permit shall be required for the existing well. Why?
I can speak to that if you'd like. The project that created this parcel did not have any, the parcel map, it did not note that there was a parcel, and in fact it did not note that there was a well on this parcel, and it in fact stated that there was no well on this parcel. So at some time between the creation of this parcel, when that project happened, till now, a well was drilled. We don't have any record of it. It could be that we just were unable to find it. However, just to be on the safe side and to make sure that we do have a record of where this well is, that is a condition that I added to make sure that this project has an approved source of water.
So will this permit simply be housekeeping and the county will fill it out and the project proponent will not be out any cash for it?
So I would have to defer to our environmental health director, Dan, on what's entailed with getting a permit. I believe that one of the things that they do have to do is to test the water, which is one of the things that I was concerned about if it has never been tested.
Through the chair.
Yes, Mr. Dean.
We'll pass this on to Mr. Wessel, but since it is existing, it doesn't require a permit to construct as well. It's existing.
Hello, I'm Dan Wessel with Environmental Health, and we do have an existing well, and I had the property owner pump test the well to ensure that it has adequate production for the project, which it does. So there's no well permit required. Essentially, you have to prove out water before you can build on the project, but there is in fact an existing well on this parcel.
Okay. You just said a well permit is not required.
Yes, sir.
Then number 13 on the conditions, I would like it stricken so we do not set a precedent. Okay, Commissioner Hart.
All right, you're not putting a well. There's a well that's there.
And it's been in use.
It's now going for public use. Where's environmental health doing water quality on this well? Just whether or not it's caught in use.
Well, there's a threshold with with the numbers for public use that we would regulate with a water system. And the definitions are kind of tricky. And when you're talking about a congregation of people that comes once a week, they fall under the threshold with their proposal as it is submitted.
Hold on. You just said once a week, but this project says three times a week.
Okay.
Is that still below the threshold?
It's vague at this time to spell it out. The threshold is basically if a well serves 25 people 60 days continuously out of the year that are the same people. And we made comments that if that were to be the case, then they may fall under the regulatory requirement to becoming a water system, what we would call a non-community water system.
Can you repeat that time frame? It was 60 days. Is that concurrent?
If it's 25 or more people, 60 days out of the year concurrently.
Oh.
Okay, so this is above that threshold because we're talking 43 people at three times, meeting three times a week. They're 52 weeks in a year. That exceeds 25 times 60.
Through the chair. Condition of approval number 9 states that the applicant shall notify the California Division of Drinking Water and follow their requirements should attendance meet or exceed 25 persons per year or otherwise meet the definition of a non-community water system.
But the definition states concurrent, like 60 days in a row.
Okay, not
my interpretation of it, but they're kind of, the definitions are a little bit confusing.
Okay, so it's 60 days consecutively, 25 or more, whereas when this is a group three times a week with a day to 2 to 3 days in between,
yes,
it's in another tier.
Yes, and so it's kind of, there's some beauty in the definition because some people may come into church and I know when I go to church I'm not drinking the water. If that makes any
it's
sense.
It's an interesting phrasing of that, sir. Yeah. But to
the
each
wine?
Their own. You're a wine drinker too, I take it. Okay. Okay. Did that answer your question, Commissioner Hart?
Oh, I'm having some heart problems.
Okay.
Considering what we just went through with the project over in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
We had a hydrologist and a geologist involved, an extensive study about groundwater use. Groundwater.
I'm sorry, can you use your microphone, please?
Public use of water. And are we overanalyzing this? And probably not, but
I think it's a numbers thing when you're comparing the two. We're talking about numbers.
Even with the density of the housing around it?
Yes.
Commissioner Mello?
If you have a well on your property and you're going to use it as they propose, the surrounding properties, the density, shouldn't have anything to do with it, should it?
No. Wells aren't regulated. Well, there's different ways that wells are regulated. Are you talking about quantity or quality?
Well, both in this case.
Okay, so I'm talking
about quality basically, because that's going to deal with their surrounding uses.
You're talking about quality?
Quantity.
So quantity is no. You have a well, I have a well at home. I don't use a lot of water. Most domestic wells in the scope of the big picture don't use a lot of water, and we're starting to learn that now as our groundwater is being regulated, and we've come up with a threshold of what is a insignificant amount of water, which comes to about 2 acre feet a year, which is about 65,000 gallons a year. At this time, there are no meters on everybody's well.
Okay.
And in my opinion, a church, when it comes to water and sewage, uses less because you've got people that just come in. You know, they're not running the dishwasher, they're not running laundry, they're not living there
full time showers.
In general.
Commissioner Veal?
Yeah. On condition 5, it's all outdoor application of sound loop, whatever. That's a departure from what's existing, I guess. And there, is the applicant okay with this?
They have received the packet, and I spoke with them last night, and that was not one of the comments that was raised as a concern.
So, very good with it, I guess.
As far as I'm aware, we can bring them up and double check with them, if you'd like.
Pardon?
Would you like
it's what it is.
Clarification on that. Amplification simply means you're plugging into a system and amplifying, not the simple act of having sound.
This was, the amplification was specific to connecting, for example, a musical instrument to a speaker to amplify it.
Okay. Wanted to be clear on that.
Commissioner Hart? Commissioner Mellon, anymore?
Yes, thank you. There were some concerns about septic. When you get a permit for a building, the septic size is there designated by the county. And it says on the form here, location of new septic leach field and septic backup field.
I would defer your question to the Environmental Health Director, Dan Wessel.
Yes.
Is that not true?
Yes, that is true. The septic has been reviewed and approved when the original 5-acre lot was split in half. And the wastewater flows are within the county's septic density standard.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that the people in the audience knew that.
They will be required to obtain a permit for the septic system from Environmental Health and meet all applicable setbacks to the existing well and adjacent wells, and that includes the expansion area.
Thank you.
Are you ready, Mr. Commissioner Hart?
I'm going to throw a curveball at you guys. I'm going to go back 20 years. There was a pretty good uproar down there. And Supervisor Erickson got a policy put in place in that supervisorial district that notification on projects concerned batching concrete, batching asphalt, rock quarrying the whole Mary Ann required notification out 1 mile from the project site. Is that policy still in place, and did it include any other types of projects? I'm just going back to notification. If there's something there that was done long ago and... has it been rescinded?
I remember that, and it was specifically for her district.
Mm-hmm. Was it for commercial use or residential? Any concrete?
Well, that's what I want to know.
Yeah.
What I remember specifically.
It came up because of a batch plant.
Yeah.
Right.
But the way the ordinance was written,
is that dark?
It seemed more general.
Wasn't it dark?
And I think it was specific to those specific uses, but I don't know for sure because it's a lot ago. And I'm kind of wondering, where's the city of Mount Shasta? How come they're not chiming in here?
and there are only two of us that were here back then when that came out.
Yeah, we're looking at
that. I was on the city council.
As we listen and speak.
Because I believe we actually acknowledged that when we had the use permit for the bottling plant because it was in her district, and that one was, that use permit was what, 11 years ago, 12 years ago?
Something like that.
2000.
Well, there's a big difference between a policy and ordinance. Are you stating that it's actually, there's an actual ordinance required?
It was, I believe it was an actual ordinance for her district.
Through the chair?
Yes.
We have the exact language here.
Please. I'll
just regurgitate it for you. Temporary portable asphalt and or concrete batch plants, incidental and accessory to off-site public construction project with 1 mile radius notification requirement, not to exceed the life of the construction project with 1 year review, not to exceed 2 years. So this project is out of the purview of that.
It was specific for the batch.
Sure, yeah. Nothing else but in place.
Concrete. Okay.
Correct, and that's under our Article 15 general provisions.
Okay.
Okay. I have a question in the application. Back to Exhibit B. Where it is the project information code analysis. It mentions in there, let me zoom in here.
Which exhibit are you looking at?
B is in boy. Just that the 2 to 4 times per year, a gathering of up to 100 people, will that need another permit, or is that for those gatherings, or is that going to be included with this use permit?
Are you talking about Exhibit B is comments. Is there a particular comment you're looking at?
No. Exhibit B is the Temple Beautiful site plan and description.
Yeah, so you go after the site plan map, and I don't know if you can see it on my screen.
So Rachel, I believe she is referencing the comment letters that note concern about the special events up to 100.
This is a document from the county.
Well, it's included in Ann Marsh's.
It's prepared by the.
It's included in Ann Marsh's comment, and she copied it. She asked for
This is after.
This is a scope of work.
Part of your scope of work under the temple building permit.
Yep.
So like you go to like that picture and then go down about 3 pages and there's a chart after the floor plan.
Yep.
Which is all Exhibit B.
I have that as Exhibit E. I'm sorry. I think that it got included as part of a comment in Exhibit B, though.
Yes,
but,
it is.
So which page are you looking at?
Okay, I'm looking at, there's the 3 columns. In the first column, yes.
Is it on a separate page? Because this one is pretty tiny.
Right there.
Right above building code requirements.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find this. It's pretty small.
It blows up nicely on the screen.
I can read it to you.
You know what? I might be able to pull it up on the overhead projector for everybody.
So it is part of
the. So which page on the PDF? Which page?
Oh, it is.
She
asked
for the whole file.
Okay.
Should be 47. 47? Okay.
In the. Do you need me to read it, or you got it, Rachel?
I'm going to bring it up on the screen so that everybody can see it.
You want me to find it for you, Tony?
Yeah, I got it.
This is what you're referring to, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So.
So is that part, that might be part of a comment, but that is part of the application?
It is also included as Exhibit E, as in
Hence the confusion.
Which column were you looking at?
That first column right above building code requirements, the 3 lines right above it. Right in there. So read that.
Okay, so under activities, that's where you're looking at?
Yeah, and it's particularly that third or fourth sentence.
Between
two and four times.
Right. So I just want to make sure that the commissioners are aware this project was originally larger in scope, and due to cost, it got scaled down to what we're currently seeing. So the between two to four times per year, we anticipate a gathering of up to 100 people for future special conferences was a remnant of the prior scope of the project. Currently, 47 people is the maximum that would be permitted as part of this project.
Excuse me?
You got it? No, yeah, I got that.
Okay.
So that is old language.
Correct.
With original. Okay, and then my other question is to address Mr. Solis's concern or comment rather. As far as the square footage, it does appear that like there's covered patios, porches that are not considered part of the footprint. Is that correct?
The floor area is measured from the exterior walls of the structure. It does not include the square footage of any walkways, stairs. The exterior patio is not included. The floor area of the building is just the interior square footage.
Okay, so if it was like just hypothetical on a home, if it was a wraparound porch, is that not included with the square footage?
No, it's not.
Okay, just double checking.
Not even the garage on a home is considered square footage of the house.
It is for insurance, and it is for taxes.
Of course. That costs you more money. But it's not included as part of the square footage of the home. My house is 100 square feet.
No, we're mixing two things up. There's square foot for triggering CEQA, and then there's square footage for insurance, then there's square footage for taxes, and then there's also square footage for when you're selling a structure. We have four to five different tiers that things fit in, and that's why I wanted to be clear on this, that it was for CEQA, it is exterior wall measurements. Does not include the footprint,
That CEQA exemption, it says, I believe the exact language is floor space, and the floor space, when building and planning measure it, we measure the exterior walls to determine what the floor space is. Unfortunately, we don't have a specific definition that, would make that more clear to people, but that is what we do for floor space, is we measure the exterior walls, including the actual walls themselves.
Yeah. So that was my question, because I, like, in getting to his point, I have a wraparound porch, and I'm taxed on it when we just added it, so that was my question.
It was been suggested that Mr. Oates had a conflict of interest because he drew the stock like plan and is also a member of the county. Can you address that? Whether I don't know that it's a pertinent to our discussions, but it's been suggested, and I think it should be cleared up.
Well, I think the conflict of interest of any would occur if he was also somehow part of the county process indirectly approving any building plans or things like that. He remains entirely outside the county process as an outside citizen. Even his county employees have a conflict of interest.
Okay.
But we wouldn't want him approving his own plans, no.
Yeah.
I'd like to address that.
Is that okay if I mess up it?
Please, go ahead.
Prior to that, Ms. Rose, I would like to add that it's clear that Ms. Rose is employed as extra help for a plan review within the building department, and he would not be assigned this project.
Okay, thank you for that.
Again, my name is Philip Oates at 245 Arnold's Drive in Town Road. My intent with this project was just to draw the design drawings for it, not be involved with the construction drawing at all. Once this is approved, we're going to move ahead with hiring an architect or engineer to do the construction drawings. And I would completely remove myself, I wouldn't do the thing unless I completely remove myself from any plan check or any processing of the plans in the office. And the building official, current building official, I've talked to him about it, and I've talked to
him. It should have been mentioned that I just wanted to clear.
Oh, I'm glad you asked. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Hart, do you have anything at this point?
I'm just curious on this future. This is on Exhibit B, site plan. Is there a future grounded mounted PV solar system use under special or under separate permit? I thought all new construction you had to have that as part of the building. Just educate.
I have a similar question.
Again, Bill Oates, 245 Arnold's Drive. They're required on all new residential buildings, solar systems and fire sprinkler systems, not for commercial buildings.
So, related to the solar, does our county currently have any specific permitting process for installing solar panels on a large scale? Is there a trigger that would if I wanted to put in a half acre of solar panels to run a well or a pump on non-ag land, would that trigger a certain permit?
Yes. Through the chair. So generation is actually something that it requires a special use permit or a special zoning district. So it would have to be consistent with the zoning district. And I'm trying to get to it right now.
Even if it's for personal use?
So if it's large for personal use, it would just require a building permit.
That was my question. Okay.
Yeah. All anything that involves any utilities requires a building permit, regardless of the size.
Okay, because what I saw in here under separate permit, building permit is what that's referring
correct
to. I'm not saying this is going to be that big. I'm just thinking, I know of some grants that are out there for people doing transitioning since Pacific Power's going nuts and the state of California said go for it, that people are looking at other options. So,
what will be the lighting plan for parking lot lights in the parking lot?
There are currently no lighting shown either in the parking lot or on the exterior of the building. Should they propose some as part of the building permit process, it would be required to be shielded and not shine on any neighbor's property. And that's in our building, or actually in our code right now for all projects. It's not just for commercial projects or churches or industrial. It's all projects.
Okay.
Through the chair.
Yes.
Before we move on too far down the road, to direct staff internally for Exhibit B to remove the language that talks about the events entirely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it is.
Note that the condition within the conditional use permit of 47 total occupancy on property on site is what the standard will be.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that, because that is confusing, and let's see. More questions from the commission?
I guess the only question I have is referring back to Council's first comments about notification. Are we clear that it had been adequately noticed.
I think what I got from council is we need to continue it.
That's what I think.
Yep. Because of language specifically used in reference to CEQA not being part of the original posting, we ought to continue to next month.
Yeah, I feel if we've set forth explicitly our CEQA exemptions, and then we bring up a new one at this meeting, and it's not been noticed, and it's not been given a chance to comment on them, I'm a little concerned that there would be arguably a Brown Act issue.
Yep. I support that. Yeah. I'm sorry, the public hearing portion is closed.
Well, I have relevant information on the well that wasn't, that you guys were asking about, if you want it or not.
No, not at this time because the public hearing is closed, but you can write.
Okay. The public hearing or public comment, though, will be reopened next month.
Yes.
Because we are re-noticing it.
Yep, and so I was going to say you could.
At that time, yes.
Okay. Yep. And then you could also write comment letters with your information. Thank you. So with that, not to belabor this, if we're going to postpone it, I think we should do a motion just not to take up any more time, and then we can hear it at the May, it will be May, let me pull up a date.
May 17th.
May
17th.
17th.
Does anybody want to entertain a motion to continue?
I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
So we have a motion and a second. All the. You won't be?
I may not be.
Okay. Well, we have a quorum then.
As long as you were here.
Okay. Good. So with that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. What's that noise?
Well, don't turn, mute their cell phone.
Continue in May. Just get to June to make sure you're here.
Yes.
So that would be.
Okay, so motion carries that.
I'll be here June.
That's right.
So with that, this agenda item will be continued till the May 17th meeting. So moving on in the agenda. Let's see, what else we got? So are there any items for discussion or direction for future meetings?
I have a question or a comment under commission comments.
Okay, we'll get to that in a second.
Oh, okay.
I think the only item or direction that we need to talk about at the next meeting is...
Double frontage.
Yes, yep. Is it double frontage?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And then the future meeting will be May 17th at 9 a.m. in these chambers. Is there any correspondence from staff?
No.
Okay. Any staff comments for the housing element update, please?
Sure. So we finally received comments from HCD regarding the housing element update. They've been similar comments that our contractor has seen with other, housing element drafts. So nothing necessarily out of line with the norm of what other local agencies are dealing with in terms of the comments that were received. A lot of them were related to, fair housing, quality of housing, those types of, big ticket items that are really big down in Sacramento, which is something we expected. Juliana Lucchesi from City of Yreka, the planning director, she had sent over the comments they received, and they were pretty, for their jurisdiction, pretty much the same as ours. And I believe that's the same consultant that did their housing element as well. Rachel, I don't know if you wanted to add anything else, other than our consultant is working on integrating the comments and the revisions that are needed prior to approval. I don't believe Planning Commission will see the final in terms of approving it. Is that correct?
I don't believe so.
It just goes to the board level for just final adoption.
For the housing element?
Mm-hmm.
But is it online for us to review?
Once they finish the final draft revision, yes, it will be online for review.
Okay, thank you.
So I have a question directly related to that. I did some reach out to a couple counties that I know planning commissioners on other counties. They also are rural.
Okay.
Specifically to the state mandate on counties to provide the affordable housing component. In the three counties that I spoke to, they all mentioned that they were able, because they were a rural county, that the language of the mandate said near public services.
Yes.
And they were getting waivers so that the county either could count the municipality mandate or simply be waived because it would not be near stores, hospitals, schools, etc.
Transportation.
And when they told me that, I wanted to make sure we relayed it to you. If it's possible, get that waiver, because it makes no sense designating for affordable housing out in the middle of Shasta Valley, out in the middle of Scott Valley, out in the middle of Butte Valley. Where's your nearest hospital, school, store, etc.?
And then I had spoke to Haley this last Friday. I went to a commissioner training, and in that commissioner training, there was a the housing authority came and gave a talk on the commission and the planning department's role, and there's a bunch of information to that effect, and as well as entities that could help with grant funding to our county if to help us with the housing element, etc., that I wanted to share with Haley, and I've already told her that I would like to meet with her and share the information that I learned to help the county out, possibly financially too, to put it together. Okay, is there anything else on the housing element? And then what about the, there was a Sinibaldi appeal?
Sure, so the Sinibaldi submitted an appeal, so that hearing will be at the May 2nd Board of Supervisors meeting, so that's when it will be noticed for the board to consider that project.
Great, thank you. Are there commissioner comments? Commissioner Veal?
I've got a comment, and it's a response to Commissioner Fowle's question from last month regarding snow plowing in Highway 3. I contacted the Public Works Director. I'm going to read you his response.
This could be entertaining.
Was he civil? He was fairly civil.
Now, this is from Public Works, not the director of Caltrans, correct?
Right. This is from our local Public Works, Thomas Dean.
Okay.
Public Works Director. Anyways, I asked, what about snow plowing on Highway 3 because of the Caltrans issue? And Mr. Deeney wrote back, there is no way this can happen. We don't have the staff or the equipment to do Highway 3. Plus, the work we would do on that road would be an improper use of funds, as our funding is for county roads only. The only way we could do that would be in an emergency and launch your property were at risk. If we want better response to Highway 3, then the locals are going to have to call Caltrans and apply pressure. Thank you, Tom.
So, there you go.
Very political and high level.
So I knew it would be, and his response is not germane, because the county is running over the unplowed road to get to where they need to plow and to begin with. It's still costing them the fuel, it's still costing them the time, and it's not slowing them down. So, do we take it to the supervisors?
I can pass that along. I mean, in some respect, it will...
Because it is a matter of public safety and health, because we're talking about school kids, teachers, parents driving their little ones to school in unsafe conditions, because Caltrans has placed a greater emphasis on I-5 than they do on Highway 3.
I think what I can do is probably I would contact the county administrator and see see how she wants to deal with this. To be fair to planning, this is completely outside the community development department. And it sounds like a matter maybe of working with Caltrans, and as I say, I think it's take a fairly high level to start with and see where the county administrator would want to go with this, if at all, and she's going to talk with Public Works. So I can certainly contact Angela through this.
Good. Because all they have to do is just go back not too long ago to the early 80s, 70s, and 60s. Siskiyou County plowed Highway 3 up until about the mid-80s. At least the stretch from Fort Jones to Cali.
Okay.
Great. Okay. Anything else from the staff comments? Okay. Then I'll bring it back to commissioner comments. Commissioner Veal?
Yeah. The county received our recommendations for the VRBO requirements, and they heard those.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the outcome?
Sure. So I believe I've met with the board two times since the Planning Commission recommendations, and they have decided to go another route. And so they are looking at personalizing policies by zone. And so, for example, McLeod is its own zone due to kind of the issues, you know, the separate issues happening in McLeod. And then basically there's North County, South County. North County right now, they are looking to remove the 2.5 acre requirement, not have a cap at permits. They liked the 3-year inspection cycle idea for, you know, with a fee to be determined by the auditor. For, you know, McLeod, they are looking at potentially removing the 2.5 acre minimum as well, due to the fact that you know, the size of the parcels predominantly are below that. They are looking at some sort of cap of permits. The number going around is 10%, but that hasn't been finalized or anything like that based on the vacancy cap rate numbers that you all saw throughout those meetings.
To be clear, it'd be 10% of the available for rent?
Correct.
Not 10%?
Correct, okay. Yes. Okay. Correct. Weed, Dunsmuir, Mount Shasta, keeping the 2.5 acre minimum and looking at a cap of 5%. Another idea that they are discussing is potentially in the South County area and the McLeod area, requiring that the homeowner live in the home for 2 years as a residence prior to applying for a permit. And so their reasoning behind that is so people predominantly from out of the area can get a sense of the neighborhood and community they'll be living in, to see how they may or may not want to move forward. In addition, they are looking to remove vacation rental permits as a land use entitlement and switching it to some sort of activity or operational permit, so it would go from property owner to property owner instead of running with the land. So in a sense, property owner sells a property that wants to continue to operate a short-term rental, then they would have to apply for another permit.
Can they legally require you to live in the property 2 years before you can put it up?
Some other counties and jurisdictions have. I would say yes, just because I've just seen it in other types of in other zoning codes for other jurisdictions. But again, that was brought up the last the last board meeting. So I'll have more discussion with them on that. Actually, the May 2nd meeting as well. They had also instructed me to do additional outreach with the McLeod community because they felt like they haven't, you know, they've heard a lot from the vacation rental operators, but not necessarily the public. So I was instructed to meet with the McLeod Chamber and then also the McLeod CSD to see what their current views are. I know, you know, McLeod CSD, they submitted a comment letter when the moratorium, I believe, was occurring years back. So to get concurrence with that.
So there was not only the inspection fee, but also there was a daily, or like a VR, or a daily the occupancy fee?
Oh, that 20 per, the $20 lodger's tax. Yeah, so they didn't want to move forward with any additional type of fee as well. It seems like they're more interested, like I said, at personalizing these policies based on, you know, the area, right? They don't want to put the same type of regulation on someone that wants to do an Airbnb in Butte Valley versus, you know, somewhere outside of Mount Shasta, right? And it seems like they're amenable to certain types of caps, depending on where that goes. And, you know, they're also understanding that this is a moving target, right? So you might put a cap, might come back and be modified, so...
Okay. Through the chair, just a small comment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the county, but this has been 20 or 30 years ago.
Okay.
They tried to put a 2-year, you had to live in the home 2 years before you could sell it.
Okay.
And that failed.
Okay.
And I don't remember the county, but one of my relatives was involved in that.
Okay.
Because they bought a home and they were going to turn it.
Okay.
And I think that was the reason for putting that 2-year live-in.
Sure.
To keep, you buy a house, you do a little recommendation, you resell it, and you make a profit.
Right.
And it had something to do with taxes, capital gains or something. I can't remember all the details.
Okay, I'll look
into
that.
But this isn't new.
Okay.
So
this would be different because they'd still own it.
No, they did own the house.
No. What the county's proposing would be different than what you're talking about because that was federal tax law. Is why that failed.
That could be.
Because there's no limit as to how long you can own before you sell.
Yeah.
What they're talking about is ownership before you change the use, you still own it, is what our county's proposing.
Yeah, but isn't that a violation of personal property rights?
No.
County can have more strict land use requirements that just can't be less than the state.
Yeah, land use ain't go along with
it. That's what this is.
But there's a house on this land, and it's owned by an individual, as is the land.
Mm-hmm.
You're changing the use of the house.
I don't like that, but that's my opinion. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions, Mr. Hart?
I have a question to staff.
Mm-hmm.
And council. Next week, the Scott GSA and the Shasta GSA are going to be reviewing the county's draft well permitting ordinance and giving recommendations. Is that then, whenever it gets massaged to where everybody is comfortable with it, is that then going to come here before it goes to the Board of Supervisors?
GSA does.
Groundwater Sustainability Act. It's the group that oversees the GSP, the Groundwater Sustainability Plan.
Because it's a board
connection.
It does not come before the Planning Commission would be going to the board for a ordinance change.
We can ask some really tough questions.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. Please do.
Go for it.
And then that well permitting ordinance pertains strictly to agriculture in the Shasta and Scott Valley.
Correct.
Or does it pertain countywide?
It's
countywide. It's guidelines for well permitting and siting with the built-in governor's order with it.
So that includes domestic wells?
No, domestic wells are determined to be de minimis, so they're not included.
Yeah, it's ag only.
The assumption that
quote-unquote production wells
will be less than 2 acre feet.
I understand that, but I guess my question is what I've been having grappling with the last 5 years dealing with this. We don't have a water balance in any groundwater basin in this county, particularly South County, Shasta Valley, wherever. And subdivisions have gone in for whatever reason, and the only requirement had to prove water. And there's a couple of them where you had one well for 7 sections that got cut up into 2 acre lots. You don't know what the depth of water is. Somebody comes in and drills a well. For example, my family's ranch drilled wells 70 years ago. Neighbors who come in the last 20 years have gone down 200 or 300 feet and dried up my well, don't I have a right to go park? That could apply to domestic wells throughout the county too. Just an example of some of the tough questions I'm going to ask.
Oh yeah, there's a bunch of tough questions. And with the governor's order, there's a section 9B, subsection B, which requires that an evaluation be done on adjacent wells, which would include domestic wells, prior to the approval of a production well, so to speak. So that has to be a finding, essentially, that any adjacent well, regardless of its domestic, agricultural, industrial, has to be evaluated and found to have minimal effect on that adjacent well. And this is something that we're struggling with, and where it is drafted right now currently is that we require a professional hydrogeologist to provide a report and basically make that determination.
Just like we did for the project in Scott Valley.
Similar to that.
Similar to that, to
yeah,
that impact.
I mean, that was a full-blown...
Right, but again, for a well permit, how far out, how much distance are you talking about? Miles? Feet?
Yeah.
There's got to be a standard protocol put in place here, because if you make it so onerous, where dealing with this fish and water issue, that all of a sudden a going agricultural concern cannot afford the financial cost to do that analysis, then that nets a chain reaction of events where that property then gets subdivided and more house wells go down, so the net effect is as much or more water is going to be used. I'm asking to look into the crystal ball, like what's underneath there, we don't know that.
Right. Right.
When's that meeting?
There's a series next week. Avery Lang and Dan Russell will be attending.
And are those supervisor meetings?
They are GSA committee meetings for the Shafts of the Scott.
Is that like Matt Parker's
through the chair?
Yes, Commissioner Burke.
Four or five years ago, Elizabeth Nielsen was supposed to be doing a study into four or five water basins in the county.
We're working on it.
I thought it was submitted to the state a year ago. Is that true?
That's the GSP.
That's the GSP. Ground
the GSA developed the GSP. We haven't heard back from the state on the GSP, but the GSA is still tasked with doing work related to the GSP.
So what's going on with this well metering and all that?
That's something different.
That's something entirely different. That's state water quality.
So this study is this study going to be considered in this?
It could be, because
sometimes
that complicates the issue, because you have the State Water Quality Control Board taking away surface water on farms and ranches that have relied on that.
Yes.
They need the water. They're going to be coming to put in wells.
I sat down with her a few times.
Yeah.
Yep. So a lot of spaghetti out there.
Well, if you think the state of California is opposed to natural gas, let me tell you, they're spending $5 million to run a natural gas line or propane line down the city to Minor Street.
Where the hell's the gas coming from?
They don't care.
There'll be a gas line. There may not be gas, but there'll be gas.
There
line.
Is a gas line. Stubbed out. Literally stubbed out.
It's going to come from over there at Malin, where the line's already there.
Yes.
It comes from Utah.
Yeah.
That's PP&L.
Yeah.
Yep. Commissioner Fowle?
Yes, so I have one question, one comment. There is a high likelihood I won't be here next month.
Okay.
On the 17th. Yep. That's playoffs. So, second question is for council. The special executive order, or whatever you want to call it, from the dictator in Sacramento related to Zoom, zooming in, etc., for public meetings has now expired. And that was something I brought up last month. Are we still required to have this during our meetings, or can we go back to being in public only?
No, we can go back. We do not presently have a Zoom requirement that we have to do. If you'd like.
Because my understanding from another attorney on another board that I sit on is in order to continue doing this, it takes a monthly vote to have it available at the next meeting. And we're continuing to have this without the vote, and so I'm wondering.
I know what you're talking about. There's no legal issue the way we're doing it now. We're simply offering it optionally and in addition to. I think that requirement that he's talking about allows for commissioners to attend by Zoom.
Correct.
Right now, the commissioners, you all, cannot attend by Zoom and be officially part of the forum. And I think that's where the difference is. But right. For just the public, we don't, that doesn't apply, and we can optionally do Zoom or optionally not do Zoom. But what your associate is talking about applies to you commissioners and your ability to attend Zoom.
I have difficulty hearing on that. Yeah, I'd much rather see the eyes there, the faces of the people who are concerned as opposed to being there. That's my opinion.
We can certainly agendize the issue again. We agendized it, I think, about a year ago, and the Planning Commission decided to keep on going with Zoom, but I know Ms. Lang mentioned it to me a month or two ago, the issue, and the Commission would like us to put it on the agenda for next month.
Would you like to talk about it next month?
As Mr. Fowler, we do it.
2 months.
So let's do the June meeting, please.
Sure.
Gee, thanks, Blair.
You're welcome. You brought it up.
Yes, Commissioner.
Based on the previous comments just made, I want to thank each and every one of you for being here today. This is what makes it work. I prefer having you come up here and speak at that mic than calling on the telephone, because you then have options of hearing what everybody else says and what this commission is saying. So thank you all again for being here today.
Thank you.
Are you done?
Not quite, but you're more than welcome to leave if you'd like.
You can leave anytime you wish.
Yeah. Commissioner Fowle, you had another point, I thought?
Just letting you all know, chances are high I will not be here next month.
Okay.
I'll be back in June.
Do you still want me to send you everything?
Please.
Okay.
That way, if there's something continued, I can be current on all the projects.
Okay. Right. If there's no further commissioner comments, I'm going to adjourn the meetings. Okay. So, meeting adjourned.